Stay tuned for your 3CR podcast, featuring interviews from Bundles Fire Radio Show. 3CR is an independent community radio station in Fitzroy, Victoria, on the unceded lands of the Kulin Nation. For more information, go to www.3cr.org.au. Welcome to the fire. Straight up, I've got some special guests. My regular co-presenter, Nelly, RQ. And got a guest in the show, Chris Dion,
and Chris for short, just to make it easier for
okay.
people.
So I'm going to hand it straight over to RQ because she's going to conduct this interview with you, my brother. So let's go.
Yeah, thanks, Ankh. We've brought in Chris today. Chris is one of the core organisers of 44FU and has been doing incredible work to build 44FU with myself and the other core organisers. I'm pretty excited to have Chris on the show. Do you want to introduce yourself a bit, Chris? Maybe tell us a bit about your background.
Yeah, sure.
How you got involved.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, Uncle Robbie and Aku. Like Aku said, I'm a core organizer of 44FU. I grew up in public housing in Geelong. Moved to Melbourne when I was still small boy, like primary school aged. And ended up getting involved in public housing organizing a couple years ago now when the government announced the demolition of the 44 flats. So I didn't grow up in the flats myself, but coming from public housing had immediate sort of concern and...
In Cario, nonetheless.
In Cario, Norlane West Primary School, that kind of area, yeah.
Hardened.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm also doing my PhD at the moment, which has given me a lot of time to do public housing stuff. So, that's a bit about myself.
I never actually asked you, Chris, but when did you find out about the demolition? Like, how did you find out about the announcement?
I had been, like, listening in, like, watching things that, like, the Safe Public Housing Collective had been doing in the years kind of leading up to September 2023 when the 44 flats were announced as to be demolished. But had never really gotten involved, had just gone to a couple of rallies that had been held. And so it was around that date, September 2023, that I knew public housing had been demolished renewed and privatized. In the years leading up to that. I reckon it was around 2023.
Do you remember how you felt when you heard the announcement?
I'm not sure. Complicated for sure. I mean, immediate concern. At the time, I was also in the middle of my PhD and was doing a different topic. And was going through a bit of like a whatever crisis with it, you know, as happens.
Yeah.
And then when that announcement was made, I was like, oh, this is a great opportunity to like completely pivot my project. So I have some resources and time to be able to like contribute to organizing. And so that's how that change happened as well.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us very, very briefly what you're looking at now, what your thesis is looking into? We also don't have to.
I'll be like super brief, maybe.
Yeah.
So I'm a criminologist, I guess. And so I'm interested in like the formal systems of law, especially in this moment, how they are sort of what mechanisms are being used to bring the flats down, like, and justify their demolition. The government's, you know, making all these kinds of claims that the buildings have reached the end of their life cycle, and they talk about this building problem. There's these irreparable issues with the flats. And of course, they don't talk about the people that live in the flats at all. They kind of construct it just as this pure building problem.
Definitely.
And so I'm kind of looking into all the different legal mechanisms that are being like used by the government to bring the flats down, and how as resident organizers we interact with that, like, and these formal systems, and, you know, asking questions like, do we or should we give legitimacy to these formal systems, like the like the parliamentary inquiry that just wrapped up hearings last month, you know?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, so the relationship between those two things is what I'm interested in.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I guess not so much a government response, but it's interesting because in the last couple of weeks, and Uncle, we were talking about this the other day, but security guards have started to take industrial action on the estate. So, like, these... I guess, various different government responses or like policies that they enact in order to demolish the flats, and like different responses like the parliamentary inquiry, and that it's always concerned residents. But there's something interesting happening right now where there's a whole other cohort of people who exist on the estate who are being pushed as well to do something that they do not want to do. And I think, Uncle, we were talking about this, but have you seen posters go up, Uncle, in your building? Maybe not yet. The industrial action that the
I haven't seen anything like that.
Yeah, actually, I think I know why that is. It's because the security guards were told were told that if they put those posters up, that they would lose their jobs. So that's pretty messed up. But I might talk about that briefly because it's really interesting what's happening there. Just in case people who are listening don't know, the United Workers Union, which is the union that has coverage for security guards in Victoria, actually across Australia, but United Workers Union, or UWU, they've just been working with security guard union members to launch industrial action against the Sole, a security contracted security provider, MSS. So MSS has a contract to do security work across all of the 22 estates in Melbourne. I think in total there are about 200 guards, and there's a pretty high rate of union membership amongst those guards as well. But I think only within the last couple of months they've been told, actually, I'll step back a little bit. There are two types of work that security guards on the estate do. I've just learnt this recently. I've always just grown up with them and know them to walk around the buildings and you say hello. Security guards are required to do two types of work, as I understand it, on the estate. One is patrols, which is when they just walk around the estate, and then one's called a walk down. And a walk down is as part of the walk down, I understand that they're supposed to complete these maintenance reports. And in these reports, they identify issues with the building. It could be that there's cracks, or it could be that there's garbage that's been left on level 4, or there might be like other issues with the...
Broken windows and glass.
Yeah, you'd be familiar with that, yeah, Uncle.
And lift issues.
Yes, all of that. So typically, I think they're supposed to do a walk down just once per shift. Okay. But recently they've been told by MSS that they have to do these walk downs twice per shift.
Okay.
And this poses two most prominent problems. The first one is that it's an OHS issue. Because like your building, Uncle, it's 20 levels high. Most of them are 20 floors high. Some of them are 12, but now they're required to do these rounds, which is like from level 20, walking all the way down to the ground floor.
Well, lucky they're not walking up.
That's very true, Uncle. Yeah, you wouldn't want to be doing that upwards. But yeah, now they're required to do it twice over.
Well, that's a significant change in their routine, I suppose.
Yeah. So for that alone, it's problematic. But they're actually being told to report the problems that they see twice and take photos of the same issues and record it twice, which, like, I don't know if I have to spell it out. They're being told to falsify problems with the flats.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, and what the guards are saying, like, the guards do not want to do this because they don't want to falsify documentation, but also these guards are from, a lot of them are from the flats. A lot of them live in the flats or have family members there or grew up there or know the community. And they also can, they've heard from residents that the residents do not want to move out and they don't agree with what's been happening. No one's been given any proof of what's wrong with the buildings and they don't want to be complicit in this. And so the guards have pushed back and they're taking industrial action. They've said that they will not complete these maintenance reports and there's been backlash already. Like there are posters that have, some have gone up. I mean, if people are listening and want to help put these posters up, maybe we can bring a stack into 3CR and you can just come get some and put them up around the flats. But guards have been told that they will lose their jobs if they put these posters up. But further,
well, you can give me some.
Sick, unk, yeah. Yeah. We'll give you a stack and, yeah, and people can come in and put them up. But, yeah, these guards have also been told now that if they take this industrial action, which is protected, they're allowed to take it, that they'll be locked out of work. And if they walk off their shift...
Are they government protected by a union?
Yeah. The United Workers Union is arguably one of the strongest unions. So they've got the union backing.
And they've got a high level of unionisation, did you say?
They do, yes. Yeah, they're in a good position. Mm. And so you are now saying that they will, they'll look into making a general protections claim, which is when they take MSS to the Fair Work Commission, alleging that that MSS are taking, discrimination? I can't remember. But like in response to industrial action that they're allowed to take, MSS have done the wrong thing by saying that they'll lose their job. So I know you were taking it further and they're going to really support their guards who are trying to take this industrial action. But an interesting thing has happened, and I think we've talked about this a little bit in previous shows, Uncle. This thing that happened that was really big in the 70s called the Green Bands. I don't know, you know a little bit about
that. A little bit, yeah.
And I've just read recently that in the mid-70s, the Green Bands movement was it the 1970s that it became? The term itself was it was an Australian person that came up with the terms, but it was the Builders Labourers Union Federation, that's the predecessor to the CFMEU. They were the ones that initiated Green Bands, and essentially Green Bands took place across the 70s, but it was essentially the union movement working alongside public housing residents and other concerned citizens to protect public assets, green spaces, but also things like public housing, which working class people live in. And I think in the 70s, there was a block of houses in Redfern that were under attack by a property developer who wanted to buy them up. And the community, the Aboriginal families there, enlisted the support of the Builders Labour Federation, the BLF, to save them. And they were successfully able to do so and turn them into homes. They were able to save them. And they're still homes for Aboriginal families in Redfern now.
Okay.
But apparently the Green Bands movement also saved Flinders Street. So there's a lot of public good that was public assets that were saved. But this kind of speaks to this idea that now the union movement is potentially working alongside public housing residents to oppose something as big as this, which is all about corporate greed to protect a public asset. There's something interesting happening here and it's worth paying attention to, I think. There's been another development this week in this space, Uncle. I'm not sure if you've heard about it, but there's what they want to replace your building with, what the Department of Family Fairness and Housing want to replace it with, is a mix of social housing and a mix of affordable housing and private housing. But just last week, Uncle, residents who live in affordable housing, so they live in an area that used to be all public housing walk-ups, they were told that their rent would increase by 17%. Mm-hmm. And they had only moved in a year.
I think less than 12 months ago. So immediately within 12 months, they're getting a 17% rent hike, which I forgot the dollar figure, but
$55 a week increase in rent
for affordable housing.
Yeah.
So-called.
Yeah, and the reason that this building consortium have been able to just hike up the prices like that, I think the requirement is that in affordable housing, for them anyway, it's that the tenants pay 75%. It's capped at 75% of market rate. But what these very clever building consortiums have done is that they've used the market rate of the Melbourne region rather than that specific suburb. So they've hiked it up by 17%, which is a complete shock to residents. They cannot afford that rent increase. But they've, yeah, this is what we can expect moving forward. If they knock down your building, your estate, uncle, they're going to replace it with primarily affordable housing, private housing, and we, as far as we know, no public housing has been proposed. It's deeply troubling.
Yeah. Now, do we really know what the roots of the whole thing is, too? The original arrangement with, the developers and the state government.
Yeah, I'm going to get Chris to help us explain this, because oh my God, there's so many. the terms are so confusing. Maybe I'll just throw it over to you, Chris. Mm. But as I understand it, there's a consortium called Building Communities that's behind this. But do you want to explain to us a little bit?
I mean, it's purposefully opaque and confusing. Building Communities is the consortium that's been arranged to redevelop Flemington, and they've already built a bunch of the community housing and affordable housing and private market rate housing along Holland Street, which is just on the edge of the Flemington estate. They have relationships with the state government. Sometimes it's a public tender, sometimes it's not, and so they score massive spots of government land to build three types of housing on, none of which is public housing. Once they demolish public housing, they build a lot more units of housing. And so then the government can turn around and advertise that they're building so much housing for people. But none of it's truly affordable and none of it's truly stable, like how public housing is.
It's like the end of public health.
I think that, there's this thing also called managed decline. I'm not sure if you've heard that word, Uncle. It's like the slow deterioration and intentional deterioration of public housing, which you would know, and anyone who's lived in public housing knows that, over the years they've stopped, responding to requests for repair. Right. And they've also just stopped building new public housing. And so it's like a muscle that they're not flexing anymore. It's just gradually deteriorating. And so it's like a slow death of public housing, you could call it. Yeah. But it's still very much there, and people still very much live in these places and want them protected. So I wouldn't say it's dead yet.
Have you got a clear definition of what public land is and public is?
That's a really good question. I mean, it is land that's owned by either, I guess, the state or Commonwealth government, but, what can be called public land? I mean, the state and federal governments are settler governments, so even public land is complicated. Is it really truly public and owned in common, or is the state government just another entity that holds land? I don't know.
Exactly what it is. As far as I'm concerned, it's all an illegal occupation. It's all Aboriginal land, every square inch of it.
And that's one of the principles that we adopted recently from Lydia Thorpe's submission to the inquiry, which we thought was great, and that's why we've adopted it. But it's that no public land should be sold or leased until treaty negotiations are finalised, because that land that is publicly owned should be open to First Nation communities, negotiating for it. It's rightfully theirs. It's rightfully yours.
Well, so it's a bit problematic too, though, this talk of treaty. And they need to be talking. State government legislation is not really what a treaty is. We're entitled to international standards and practices of treaty business, like Vienna Law of Treaties. Need that sort of scrutiny rather than the state government managing and controlling everything. Terms of reference and their conditions. That's not a treaty.
Definitely. I might actually also add, another co-organizer in our group, Connor, was recently in Aotearoa, and he met up with some public housing campaigners there. And even though there is a treaty in Aotearoa, when it comes to public housing and public land, there is like an arrangement. I'm probably going to butcher this. Connor's going to be so mad at me. Mm-hmm. But essentially, there is an arrangement in place where, like, before public land is sold, it's given to Maori people to it's like they're given the opportunity to buy it first, okay. Right, Uncle? But if they don't have the capacity to buy it, a private developer is just going to buy it. So it's even when there is a treaty in place, there are still issues with what happens to the land.
Mm. That's right. Mm. There's a real danger with this treaty business they're talking about. Like I said, it's not a proper internationally scrutinised treaty process. It's it's just more racist colonial state government legislation.
Yeah.
And the way they've established all that. Serious problems with that. Like I said, every square inch of this land, right across this continent, belongs to Aboriginal people.
Yeah.
There's still genocide going on here.
Yeah.
They haven't, there's no end of hostilities. How do you negotiate? Well, that's the situation. You know, we're under duress, undue influence.
Mm.
Yeah.
There's no proper representation from Aboriginal people.
No.
They're corporations misrepresenting us.
Yeah.
And, there's no talk of customary law recognition and, they're the real issues of I'm concerned with, but all that land, every bit, every vacant bit of land should be handed straight over to Aboriginal people, if they're interested in closing their gaps.
Yeah.
And that's my take on it.
Yeah. I think that's why what's happening at Camp Sovereignty is so significant. And like, if people haven't gone there yet, like, strongly encourage people just to head down and to chat to people who were there and work out what's going on.
Absolutely.
Your speech was really powerful at Sovereign Day Out on Saturday, where you talked about, like, land back starts here and it starts at the sacred fire that you and the community there have built. Just it's about truth telling, right, Uncle?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, just on that note, I've got a little advertisement for a rally that's happening on the weekend.
Excellent.
And I might play that and a song, then we'll come back and wind it up. Eh?
Yeah.
All right. Time is 23 minutes past 11. This is Bunzel's Fire.
Stand with Camp Sovereignty. Corroboree, not colony. No to Nazis, no to white supremacy. Join the Sovereignty Never Ceded National Day of Action, starting at 11 a.m. on the corner of Flinders Street and Swanson Street, Nam, on Saturday the 13th of September. Racism and Fascism Not Welcomed Rally and March is a 3CR supporter. But the wealth ain't yours when it's held by royals, and everybody protests when it's blood for oil, but not indigenous blood on the soil. Blood boils, flows on the riverbed and burns through the veins of the...
I'm here with Aku and Chris, and we're having our regular Wednesday report on the 44 towers and what's going on with all that business, the intended destruction of these places. Where lots of our community live, we've got a couple more minutes. I just want to
Just one last update for this week. As people might know, according to Homes Victoria's plan, they want everybody out of the first three buildings within Tranche 1, which is two buildings in Flemington and one in North Melbourne, by the end of September. And a date that we've heard residents say is the 23rd of September is when they want everybody out by, which is, I think it's less than 2 weeks away, which is concerning.
So people like me don't really realise until it's right on top of us and we're getting actually thrown out. It's not going to really, understand what's going on until I'm sure that it's what's going to happen to a lot.
I think they're also counting on that. The government's also counting on residents only realising until the very last minute. Yeah.
And it's deeply troubling because there are many families still left in all of these buildings, and they haven't we've said this before, there are not enough homes to relocate people into. This whole plan is such a farce, and it's becoming more and more apparent to more and more people. But a concerning thing that we've heard from some residents is that there've been like incentives to get people out by the 23rd of September. And we know that this question was put to the Housing Minister, Harriet Shing, in Parliament. I might get Chris to tell us a little bit more about that and what her response was.
So, and we had been hearing some rumours about Homes Victoria, they're called relocation officers, we call them displacement officers, that they have been incentivized to get residents out sooner and to use a wide range of tactics to do that. And Harriet Shing, the housing minister, was asked to explain that pretty much in Parliament. And she kind of gave her usual response. She's a great orator. I don't know how to describe it. She knows how to mince words.
Reflector.
And she pretty much responded by saying that the relocations team are doing their job and that, you know, this framing is strange because it seems to suggest that public servants are being rewarded for doing what sits at the heart of their work, is what she said. And so she did completely deflect from that, so we don't have any solid... You know,
we'll keep everyone posted. We'll keep you posted. We'll come back next week and tell you if we hear more. But things are probably gonna get pretty hairy from here on in.
Especially in these last 2 weeks, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll keep at it. Join us again next week, okay? And
we'll do.
Where we're at that time. Let's
thanks, Unc.
Get those posters up.
We'll bring them in to 3CR. Yeah. People should put them up. Thanks heaps.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. To listen to a full audio of Bundles Fire Radio Show, a historically informed critical analysis of Aboriginal affairs and the ongoing political movement for land rights, treaty, sovereignty and the cessation of genocide, go to 3cr.org.au/Bundles Fire. If you want to support independent black media on 3CR, please go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.